This is Unfortunate History.
Hey everybody, this is Cody Pennington.
And this is Greg Skinner.
And welcome to Unfortunate History. This is a podcast that covers interesting, wacky, and unfortunate moments in history. And in today's episode, we'll be discussing the world's unfortunate history with pandemics and plagues. We will not be discussing the coronavirus today, or ever.
Because fuck that virus, because it's all we've heard about for the past fucking 8 months, and we don't want to talk about it anymore.
We don't want to talk about it anymore. We are right now, but there are plenty of other podcasts dedicated specifically to coronavirus, COVID-19, whatever, if that's what you want to hear about. But today, we are discussing pandemics from history. Now, also, I'd like to start this episode with a bit of a disclaimer. Greg had the idea for this episode a couple of months ago, but we both eventually decided that doing the episode at the beginning of the pandemic would either be in bad taste or it would just be seen as a way to capitalize on the suffering. I think, and I think we both agree, that we've reached a point now where we can do this episode without seeming like we're taking advantage of the situation. And further to that, the topic has actually been requested by a listener, so suck it, naysayers.
Yep, naysayers. See, when I suggest it, oh, it's a shit episode. It's a shit idea. As soon as a listener suggests it, it just strikes to the top of the pile. It's how Cody works. It's all about the listener, not about his friends.
Well, yeah. What are we doing this for, if not for the listeners?
Literally, exactly that.
Yeah. Now, plagues and pandemics have been an unfortunate staple of pretty much all of human history. Since humans have been around animals, it's been a thing. Now, the world has dealt with numerous outbreaks throughout all of time, with many being deadly and destroying significant populations. But today, we'll touch on just a few. I think four we've got today. Four of the more deadlier ones.
Yeah, I figured they're going to be heavy hitters, aren't they? They're going to be the ones that really just, you know, stuck it to humanity.
Well, I guess, yeah, that are still sticking it. There's one that I left out, but I'll try to mention it towards the end. But we did get at least the most infecting pandemic in the world.
The big daddy diseases, them ones.
Yes, exactly. You should have heard about these if you haven't. Mm-hmm. I don't know where you've been. Now, this is the way we're going to do the episode. We're going to have, I'm going to tell you a little bit, kind of an overview of each one. And then, Greg, you can ask me some questions about them, I guess, if you want.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
we're going to discuss just the overview of what they did, how they developed, or what issues they caused, how many people they killed, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's an interesting. That's an interesting stat. Just the death toll of these fuckers.
Yeah. Now, let's start with a more recent history. In 1981, the discovery of HIV and AIDS.
Ooh, big one.
Yeah. Now, the human immunodeficiency virus infection, HIV, acquired immune deficiency syndrome, AIDS, is a collection of conditions caused by the HIV virus. Now, this virus causes a deficiency in the victim's immune system, causing them to become more susceptible to certain infections like tuberculosis, which was a big killer.
So would it be safe to say that here that it's not actually the AIDS that kills you, it's AIDS that leaves you susceptible to something else to kill you very easily?
Absolutely, yeah. It's said plenty of times for AIDS and HIV patients, they are very rarely killed by HIV themselves. If you never die from the disease, you're more likely to live with it than to die, or to die with it than to die from it.
Because HIV and AIDS, they're kind of different, and HIV develops into AIDS. Is that right or is that wrong?
That is, yeah. So HIV causes AIDS. So the immunodeficiency virus infection, the HIV, is what leads on to immune deficiency. So it's a virus that has a possibility of making you immune deficient. Mm-hmm. Or destroying your immune system, which if it gets along further down the road, it will progress into AIDS.
Yeah, it's through transmission of blood and semen, I believe.
Yes, we will get to that in a moment.
Okay.
Now, science has pretty much concluded that the virus originated in chimpanzees and was eventually able to jump the species barrier to humans, which actually almost every single pandemic has done. The majority of them have been pandemics where the virus jumps the species barrier into humans, and then the humans are not ready for it, and it just destroys populations.
Yeah, because there was always the, I believe it was a myth that it started because a dude wanted to fuck a monkey.
Yeah, well, some believe that it did occur because people were having sex with chimpanzees. Mm-hmm. I always think about Dave Chappelle's stand-up. Yeah. I don't know if you've seen it. Oh, man. He's like, scientists believe they want to fuck a monkey. You going to come to the club? No, I'm going to stay here with my monkey.
I'm going to stay here and fuck my monkey.
No, that is a pretty lofty claim, to claim that people caused AIDS by having sex with monkeys.
I'm pretty sure someone somewhere did fuck a monkey at some point in history, but I don't believe that's the reason AIDS was caused.
Yeah, I'm sure it's happening now, but...
Sam, have you seen the strength of a fucking monkey or a chimpanzee?
Yeah, that's one of the things that Dave Chappelle
It'll
says.
It'll tear it straight off.
Yeah. You don't want to fuck around with it.
Don't fuck a monkey. Don't fuck monkeys, people.
Don't.
For moral reasons and for your own personal safety, that will fuck you up.
They will, absolutely.
Believe me, I've tried many times.
The Coventry Zoo.
And I got AIDS.
However, most scientists agree, and it's kind of the generally accepted view, that it's a good assumption that the virus made the jump into humans when hunters actually ate the meat of infected chimpanzees, or the blood of infected chimpanzees found its way into the body of the hunters. Like, I guess if they had a cut on them and they were carrying a dead body that was bleeding.
I don't believe it's... For some reason, I feel like I've got knowledge on this, but I don't believe it's possible to contract, to get HIV through eating tainted meat. I don't think it works that way, because I think stomach acid will actually neutralize the virus. I think it's usually through direct blood-to-blood contact or other bodily fluids into the bloodstream. And I don't think AIDS can survive being cooked either, but I'm no expert, but it seemingly I have this knowledge and I don't know where it's come from.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you are right. Yeah, it can't survive the cooking process, but I just got it from this. It's a scholar paper. It just says through the butchering and consumption of monkey meat.
Look, this is probably just more speculation from me, but I reckon that the most logical way in my head, if it had been transmitted, was probably say they got bit by a chimp. The chimp had bleeding gums, which, you know, they don't have dental care, and said blood got into the wound. AIDS. That's my little theory on how that probably came about, I think, personally. But I'm not a scientist.
Yeah, it may well have, yeah. I mean, it's definitely a way that it can transmit. I'm sure it could have done that as well. If you guys want to read up on this, just Google Origins of HIV and the AIDS Pandemic.
Read my new book called AIDS, My Passion by Greg Skinner.
The paper is by Paul M. Sharp and Beatrice H. Han, or Han.
And goo.
As most know, and as Greg kind of alluded to earlier, the virus transfers from human to human primarily by unprotected sex. And this includes oral or anal sex, so you should still be safe if you're a little freaky.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, up to this point, around 33 million people have died from HIV or AIDS, and 76 million have been infected. Now, we mentioned a moment ago that the virus causes immunodeficiency in its hosts, which leaves them open to opportunistic infections. Because of this, people rarely die from HIV itself, but rather the infections they receive because of their immunodeficiency. Mm-hmm. And the virus actually is still around, obviously, although it is more survivable now than in the 80s when it was discovered, with the advent of multiple long-term treatment opportunities, because we all know that pharmaceuticals would much rather develop a treatment than a cure.
Because surely wasn't there a thing going around that just before COVID struck that they'd actually managed to fully cure a man of HIV, and then it's just gone dead quiet since then. So again, like you said, it's much more price efficient to treat a virus than actually cure it.
Oh yeah, absolutely, especially in the States.
All right.
Now we'll jump back in time a bit more to 1918. This is a big one, and you probably heard about it recently, especially with coronavirus going around. This was the Spanish flu of 1918. Now, the Spanish flu rocked the world in 1918, reaching nearly every country and infecting over 500 million people, which was about a third of the world's population at the time.
That's the most surprising thing there is how 500 million people was a third of the world's population back then as compared to now. Jesus Christ, we have not stopped fucking since then.
No, we haven't. And actually, that will play a point into pandemics. And we'll talk about that towards the end of the episode. But yes, we will talk about overpopulation. Now, the Spanish flu was an unusually deadly form of the influenza virus, and it lasted for four significant waves, and the one we'll be talking mostly about today is the second wave. But it's a very interesting disease, yeah. So the flu actually, this one, targeted and hurt younger people more than older people. So actually, it hit the middle range. So younger children were okay with this flu. Older people were okay with the flu, but it actually harmed, in the second wave at least, it harmed more middle-aged people than anybody.
No, why? That's really interesting, because typically, so we would have been, what, quite susceptible to this?
Yeah, you and I would be very susceptible to it, which was very interesting to read about.
Yeah, because typically we're the ones that, you know, can just shrug this kind of stuff off, but not this time.
No, yeah, and I believe that was through the second wave, though. So the first wave was okay, but the second wave was the worst one. Now, through the first wave of the pandemic, the Spanish flu caused flu-like symptoms very similar to typical flu symptoms, most notably a sore throat, headache, a fever. However, the second wave of the pandemic was the truly deadly part. Those that had been exposed to the flu during the first wave were found to have been developed an immunity to it. But those that had not yet been infected were hit very hard by the disease.
So that scares me, because I don't think I've had COVID yet, and I'm predicting a second wave, mate.
Well, you've also had flu vaccines in your life. I'm sure vaccinations will not give you an immunity to everything, but I can imagine that you've developed some form of at least a bit of a shield to hit things like this hitting you very, very hard.
If you'd seen some of the things I've eaten in my life, I think I'm immune to everything, Cody. Like
wild monkey meat.
Wild monkey meat, yeah. Got the AIDS. Can't get anything else.
The second wave of the disease was often accompanied by bacterial pneumonia. Now, if this did not kill the victim, they would sometimes have to deal with heliotrope cyanosis. Now, this condition caused the skin to first develop two mahogany spots over the cheekbones. These spots would then spread over the course of a few hours until the entire face was blue. The extremities would then develop black coloration, which would then spread to the limbs and torso. And once these stages had occurred, death would follow within hours or days, caused by fluid buildup in the lungs.
Jesus Christ, that's... See, I'd only really heard of the Spanish flu due to COVID with the comparisons, and I did not know it was that vicious.
It was very vicious in its stages, 100%, because they didn't really have the treatments we have today.
No.
You know, if you have medical interventions, you can help things in a certain way. Like right now, you can get treated for coronavirus. You can have a treatment for it. You just can't get cured by it, or you can't get an immunity to it. But back then, they didn't have anything like that. They might have had Advil, you know, but you don't have enough to help you keep you from getting the fluid buildup in your lungs.
I'm going to prescribe you whiskey for this.
Yeah.
Enjoy it as your last drink, because you are fucked.
Now, further to that terrible end-of-life symptoms, other symptoms included spontaneous mouth and nose bleeds, miscarriages in pregnant women, a peculiar smell, teeth and hair falling out, delirium, dizziness, insomnia, loss of hearing or smell, blurred vision, and impaired color vision.
Jesus Christ, the news did not do this justice when comparing it to the coronavirus. This is nothing like the coronavirus.
This was much worse than the coronavirus. Let's be honest. This, especially, I mean, maybe if we didn't have medical interventions like we do today, the coronavirus would be more, you know, dangerous.
And we'd all be diarrhea-ing ourselves to death and having our teeth fall out.
Yeah, please know I'm not saying that it's not been deadly for some people. Honestly, I think my grandfather passed away from it as well. We don't know for sure, but I know people have lost people. I'm just saying that the Spanish flu obviously was much more deadly, just probably for the fact that they just didn't have the medical knowledge that they do now. Now, in total, over the course of the year, 1918, between 17 and 50 million and possibly as high as 100 million people died from the Spanish flu, making it one of the deadliest pandemics in all of human history.
Jesus Christ. And again, not a nice way to go. It's not like it sends you off in your sleep. That you knew you were dying.
Yeah. I mean, you can only be thankful for what medical technology has delivered. I mean, I talk a lot of shit about pharmaceuticals, but at the end of the day,
they are saving lives.
There are a lot of interventions saving lives, but we all should also point out that a lot of the times those are funded by public money. So,
yeah, well,
especially you look at the coronavirus vaccine being made in Oxford right now, and that's through literally a partnership with Oxford University. So, now the Spanish flu is actually the first of two pandemics caused by the H1N1 influenza virus. Might have heard about that not too long ago, because the second pandemic occurred in 2009 with the swine flu pandemic. They both came from the same strain of influenza.
Oh, really? Did it? Because yeah. I thought that might pop up at some point. I did not know that they were linked.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they came from the same, the same strain. So you can imagine the swine flu pandemic did not do anything anywhere near as bad as the Spanish flu. So obviously mm-hmm. they were able to intervene quite a bit. With that
one. We started wiping out a lot of cattle, didn't we?
Yeah.
Or am I thinking of foot and mouth?
No, that might have been bird flu. No, mad cow disease?
We called it foot and mouth over here, but mad cow disease as well, which was through feeding cows their own brains or something, wasn't it? I don't know. I'm sure that's what they were doing. They were grinding up other cows, feeding to the cows, and it was sending them fucking loopy.
Oh, yeah. Well, feeding cows other cow meat. Yeah, I didn't know it was their specifically brains.
No, they can eat other cow meat, but because the brains and spinal cords were getting ground in with everything else, and they were eating it. And apparently, you shouldn't eat your own species' brain and spinal cord because it'll fuck with you.
What? Nobody told me.
I'm not a scientist. I've been eating all these brains and nothing's... Again, not a scientist. I could be totally wrong. This is something that I believe my mom told me, and I'm going to take that as fact.
Yeah, there you go. Actually, this is a great episode for the listeners to write in and tell us if we're wrong. info@unfortunatehistory.com. I know that we have some medical listeners listening right now, so if I get anything wrong, I haven't worked in the medical field in years, so let me know. Probably 7 years.
And I have never, ever, ever, ever worked in a medical field. I've been to the hospital a lot of times, not worked there. No. So yeah, I'm pretty sure that the things I'm saying will almost definitely be wrong. But yeah, people don't eat spines and spinal cords and brains because it will send you mad.
Try not to. Now, the next one we're going to talk about is quite a short one, but it was an interesting one that I wanted to throw in here. Now, this one occurred in 1875. Now, this one was the Fiji measles pandemic.
Hmm.
Now, in 1874, Fiji was actually coming out of terrible intertribal wars. They had been fighting with each other for apparently quite a long time. Now, the chief of Fiji, in hopes of making a peace and to have a more prosperous future, the country ceded to the British Empire.
Mm-hmm.
And in late 1874, I think it's pronounced Fijian, or it looks like you would pronounce it as Fijian, but I think it's Fijian chief.
I just pictured a fajita. That's
yeah,
all
I'm exactly. Saying. Yeah, that's, I see that, and I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty hungry now.
Well, I'm going to say Fijian. Well, the Fijian chief, Ratu Kakabau, I think that's what it is, Kakabau, was persuaded to travel to Australia for an official state visit, as in a favor for the queen. He was going to meet royalty. And he was going to represent his country there.
Okay.
Now, unbeknownst to Kakubau, an outbreak of measles had begun in Sydney. Well, he and his entourage caught the disease, all of them, although they were actually able to quickly recover with the use of attentive nursing care. You can imagine that the chief of a country would get the care that he needed.
Yeah.
However, when they returned to Fiji, they were found to still be contagious. Now, within a week, the island was littered with corpses that were scavenged by wild animals. Entire villages had died and were burned down, and sometimes some of them were burnt down with the sick, still alive and trapped in the fires.
Jesus Christ, what a brutal fucking way to... Like, you're not already ill. Like, you're already dying, and now you're going to burn to death.
Can you imagine, like, having a headache and then smelling smoke? Like, oh, God.
Well, the fire alarm starts going off. Like, oh, no, we're in trouble now. That's another question for that, though. Measles, the original measles, did that come from animals? Or was this the first one on our list that wasn't spread from animal to human?
I don't know if it originated from animals. I looked, and it said that scientists believe that it may have originated from animals, but I think it would have had to have originated quite a long time ago. I think they mm-hmm. said something along the lines of earlier human civilization is when measles would have come around.
Jesus Christ, that fucker's been around a long, long time then.
Yeah, very, very old. But you can also see why a Fiji would not have had it on their island, because they're an island nation. So no one brought it in.
You know what else is an island nation? Britain.
Yeah.
And yet here we are.
Yeah, get ready for that. Get ready. I'm going to smack you with a big old fucking bit of fact in a second. But back to Fiji. Now, after they were trapped in, obviously I just said that they were trapped in alive and they burned everybody to death. Well, after burning a lot of people to death and all that, in total, one third of Fiji's population, a total of 40,000 people, had completely died.
Jesus
Christ. Just from a measles outbreak. Which, that's pretty much all there is to that story. I just wanted to add it in there because I thought it was super freaking interesting that an island nation was just debilitatingly destroyed by just measles, things that kids have.
Basically, what, chicken pox?
Yeah, that people just kind of get just to have.
And you itch for a little bit and then it passes. And then, yeah. Jesus Christ, it shows. When was this again?
1875.
I guess 1875. So measles was not deadly anywhere else in that time?
I don't know if it was. I think they had medical interventions enough for measles. I don't think it was super deadly. These guys were deadly because they were proper tribes. They were actually Aboriginal type tribes, you know.
Because I'm sure measles today can be quite lethal without medical intervention and in later age. If you get it as a kid, your body can, for some reason, handle it. If you catch it in later life, it can be quite, it can kill you.
You look at chicken pox, it can kill adults if they've not had it as a child or if they've not had the immunization. Mm-hmm. So, get immunized, people.
Mm-hmm.
Immunize your children.
You never, they will not get autism or anything else that some people seem to think that they will get from being, vaccinated or immunized.
Let's not get into the science.
Edit it out. I'm going to get in trouble.
Now, this next one is going to be our last major one. And then I'll mention another one a little towards the end, just give you a quick fact about it. But this one is a big one.
I feel like I know what it's going to be, but I'll let you go. Let me guess. Is it the Black Death?
It is a portion of it, because this one occurred in 1665. This is the Great Plague of London. Now, the plague, this plague was actually the last major epidemic of the bubonic plague in England. The bubonic plague, really, it had never actually left. Now, the Great Plague of London occurred during the second pandemic, which was a period of intermittent bubonic plague epidemics that lasted for centuries.
Jesus Christ.
They were fighting the bubonic plague on and off for a very long time. Since the, I believe the first one was the 1300s.
Look, imagine you know how we're taking COVID now, where everything's shit. You know what I mean? We are complaining about this.
I hate it.
This is centuries worth of a very, 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 very lethal disease that was spread by rats, I believe.
Rats, fleas. It's usually fleas would bite you. The fleas on the rats.
But these things were literally everywhere. These people lived in amongst their own shit. You know what I mean? Victorian England was literally a horrific place to live.
Yeah.
Because literally it was people wallowing in their own filth. It doesn't surprise me at all that we struggled with this kind of, this issue back then, because again, it was just asking for disease, the way people lived. Again, literally shit out on the streets, rats everywhere, obviously fleas on rats. People's hygiene was not good.
No, it was not good. And this this plague really rocked you if you got it, which I'll talk about the symptoms in a moment. But because Britain had already been fighting the bubonic plague for quite a long time, they had a lot of experience with the plague, and they actually had preventative strategies in place that they can put into place when they had another outbreak. Now, one particular strategy that they used was the quarantining of incoming ships, which is crazy, right?
Smarter than what we fucking did.
They actually quarantined incoming ships from international countries. It's almost like the country was better equipped for a pandemic during the 1600s, the 1660s.
It fucking sounds it.
Okay, this is interesting, actually, to me. Now, the amount of time the ships had to wait in port was originally referred to as a trentine, a period of 30 days. However, this was upped to a quarantine, a period of 40 days. So that's actually where the term quarantine comes from, and it actually means 40 days. So there's a little bit of slight etymology for you listeners if you guys get hard because of that stuff.
Tell your friends next time when someone says, oh, you've got a quarantine. It's like, whoa, if you ask me to quarantine, it's got to be for 40 days. Anything less, it's not a fucking quarantine. Get it right!
It's not a quarantine from the original origin of the word. It changed over time just because people like... just taking words and just shitting them out. These poor, poor words.
I feel like if you're going to go like that, you definitely have to start the conversation with, actually. Actually, it's 40 days originally.
No, I'm sorry, but...
Let me just correct you there, bruh.
Well, unfortunately, the quarantining of ships failed. Imagine that. And the disease began to spread around the city. Now I'm going to get into the symptoms of this virus, or this disease. When you contract the bubonic plague, you were in for a pretty terrible experience. Firstly, you'd get fever and chills, along with extreme weakness. Further to that, you'd also have one or more swollen, tender, or painful lymph nodes. And these were referred to as buboes.
Like
that might be pronounced incorrectly, but obviously that's where bubonic plague comes from. So buboes.
That might be my new Instagram handle.
There you go, Greggy Buboes. Now this is where the bubonic part of the disease comes from. Like I just said, more etymology for you people. Now the buboes or buboes would grow to around the size of a chicken egg, and many people would develop multiple on their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And it would always be close to where they had their tick bite. So the lymph nodes that were around the tick bite, the closest, those would be the ones that would swell out. Now, the bacterium that causes bubonic plague, Yersinia pestis, then kills by cutting off the cell's ability to communicate with other immune system cells needed to fight off the bacterial invasion. This is why it targets your lymph nodes, as they are a big part of your immune system. They keep out the microbial intruders. So they're kind of like sentinels in your body. If microbial intruders get into your body, the lymph nodes are what tell the body to help fight it off, and they help fight it off.
They're basically doormen, you know, bouncers at a club. Like,
yeah, 100%.
You're not coming in. You're not coming in. Then that hits, and they're like, whoa, we're out of here, man. They're done.
Yeah. Once the bacterium makes its way into your lymph nodes, it multiplies and then finds its way into your bloodstream. Now, your body will finally see that something is wrong, and your immune system goes into overdrive, which then causes septic shock. And then this eventually leads to organ failure, and all in all, it's a pretty terrible way to go. Now, something very interesting about this bacterium, when it enters a host, the reason the lymph nodes can't tell, when it enters the host, there's a part of the bacterium that would signal to the lymph nodes that it is foreign, it's a foreign microbial intruder.
Mm-hmm.
When it enters a host that's 98.6 degrees, obviously the internal temperature of humans, it can tell it's in a mammal, and it coats this part of itself to hide itself from the lymph nodes. And that's how it's able to sneak in, kind of like having a fake ID at a club.
Literally, yeah. So he's got past the bouncers. That's crazy clever, considering it's bacterial. Is it say it was bacterial? It's a bacterial virus?
It's a bacteria that causes it. Bacteria is the worst part of this. So if it's a bad bacteria that gets into your bloodstream, you're very likely not to survive.
See, that really puts me off. You know, you see these like weird little yogurt things that they say are full of good bacteria.
That is good bacteria.
How different is good bacteria from a bad bacteria?
That is good bacteria, Greg. Just eat the damn yogurt.
I don't trust it. I don't trust how good it is.
Just eat the fucking yogurt. Well, that's the interesting part. But then once it finally realizes that something's wrong, by that time, that bacterium is already in your bloodstream. So there's nothing you can do, and your body goes into septic shock. And septic shock is obviously very fatal unless it can be treated instantly. Nowadays, it's still even very fatal. Well, a large portion of London started to contract the disease, many being lower class, obviously.
Yeah.
Because of this, the upper class began to actually leave the city. There was a huge exodus from the city with the upper class, including, I think, King Charles II, I think it was. I'm not 100% sure. There was only a few people in government that really decided to stay at their posts in the city, which was very interesting. And actually, some of you listeners will remember from our pilot episode, we mentioned Samuel Pepys that had that really terrible, was it his gooch he had to have cut open, I think it
something
was.
Something like that. I think I remember this now.
He actually stayed in London to document what was happening during the bubonic plague.
That takes some gonads.
Yeah. Well, he didn't have any.
I'd like to follow up with that. He got him sliced the fuck off.
Well, no, it's he actually did stay back. And we said in that pilot episode, he lived a really interesting life. And we're going to do an episode on him, but that's just a little tie-in to our first episode. But yes, the upper class was leaving and only a few people stayed. Now, in an attempt to actually stop the spread, hundreds of thousands of cats and dogs were actually slaughtered because they thought they were the possible cause of the disease. And this did not help, unfortunately.
Because then you got a load of rotting corpses. Animal carcasses, just, which, let's be real, what they did in those times? They chucked them on the street and went, someone else's problem. And they rotted and festered.
Well, and that's again, what they did with dead bodies as well.
Yeah, literally. They built big ditches, didn't they? And just chucked them in. And again, rotting, festering flesh. It must have stank so bad.
Yeah. Well, eventually, like you just mentioned, mass graves started to appear. Now, one particular account said that the drivers of the dead carts had to collect so many victims that it became an around-the-clock service.
And you know what? I can't get someone to come and collect a broken fridge.
They were outside your house. They would actually come outside your house and say, bring your dead.
Jesus.
And they would just bring the dead, throw them on the dead cart, which was the name of it, dead cart. It was a cart. It wasn't just a cart. They called it the dead cart. That's hyphenated, by the way. Etymology. Very crazy. Well, a great hole was dug near the church in Aldgate, 50 feet long and 20 feet wide. Now, while the dead cart drivers were dumping bodies into one side of the hole, laborers continued extending it on the opposite side of the hole to make it longer because they knew they'd need more room.
So that makes you think, were they that at risk? Once the bodies were deceased, were they still contagious? Could they still... I suppose it was from fleas, wasn't it? So...
I suppose you'd still want to wear protection.
But was this... Would this have been during the old, what's the term for it now? The plague. Well, obviously the plague, Dr. Times, when they'd wear the sort of beak. And it'd be stuffed with herbs. And
yeah, I think that was just PPE back then.
Oh, what was it called now, the name of that, where they generally believed it was bad smells that caused this disease? I'm sure they believed for a long time it was gnarly smells that caused this disease.
Olfactory?
And that's there was a name for it. Was it miasma? I think it was miasma, where that was the belief that it was the gnarly smells that caused it. That's why that mask and with that beak, well, the beak would be stuffed with herbs and spices because I believed that it was smells that were causing this disease. Mm. When obviously, in fact, it wasn't. It was fleas, but they didn't understand. But then they just thought, gnarly smell, disease. It goes hand in hand, doesn't it?
Yeah, I suppose so. Well, it really just does. Miasma, an unpleasant smell or vapor. Generally, any disease is going to come, especially when they're dying, when they're literally rotting you from the inside or going into sepsis. Septic wounds will smell like death before the person's even dead. If you have that sort of infection, you're gonna smell really, really bad.
Yeah. Again, I'm sure it's miasma. I might be wrong.
I think miasma is just something being smelly. I don't know.
I'm sure it's the theory of the smelly thing being the deadly thing, even though it was often wrong.
Miasma. It might be miasma theory. Yeah, miasma theory.
The one time old Greg is dropping knowledge on the podcast. This has got to be a first. I'm on fire today.
Yeah. So miasma means the smell, unpleasant smell. But obviously the miasma theory is that the smell was causing the disease. But they thought that of chlamydia.
What, really?
Yeah, because that probably smelled rank as well back in those days. Well, anyways, back to this giant hole. Now, they were trying to extend it to make it longer, but eventually there was no room to extend this mass grave. So instead, they started to dig deeper until they reached groundwater 20 feet down. Now, when the hole was finally covered, it housed 1,114 dead bodies.
See, I thought that was, I feel like that's a lower number than I was expecting. Even though it's a lot of bodies for one big hole. Maybe not. I'm picturing it now.
1,114 dead bodies for a 50 by 20 foot hole that's 20 foot deep. That's quite a lot of dead bodies. That's piled up. And you can dig that up and find 1,114 sets of bones. That's insane.
Well, I read a fact before that in the Lake Loch Ness in Scotland, you can fit the entire world's population into that lake. Time's free, I think.
Oh, I don't believe that.
Oh, it's a bit mad, but I don't know. I read it somewhere.
I'm going to Google that.
Google it. I'm sure it's something that you can fit the world's population time something into Lake Loch Ness.
Okay, well, this is from lochnessmystery.blogspot.com, so take it with a grain of salt. It says, the fact that the volume of water in Loch Ness is equivalent to containing the entire population of the world. I don't even know what that means. We're not going to get into that.
Well, it's kind of right. I kind of dropped some knowledge.
I don't know. Google that and bring it into the next episode.
Okay.
Now, by the end of the pandemic in London, 20% of London's total population had been killed by the bubonic plague. But that is disputed. It may or may not be higher. I think records were destroyed and not found, or they weren't kept very well, which I guess you'd understand if everybody's leaving the city to get away from this plague.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the outbreak finally tapered off in 1666, just in time for London to go through another destructive event, the Great Fire of London, which we'll cover on another episode. But they could not get out of it.
No, they could not catch a break.
Now, for the sake of clarity, I'd like to mention that there are further forms of plague. So there is the septicemic plague and the pneumonic plague.
Mm-hmm.
Now, septicemic plague occurs when the bacteria... when the bacteria enter the bloodstream directly. Now, if it's left untreated, as we just mentioned, bubonic plague will make its way into the bloodstream. So that means that actually bubonic plague as well as pneumonic plague can both become septicemic plague. It just depends on how far it goes, because pneumonic plague is where it enters the lungs and it affects your lungs. But your lungs can go into your bloodstream from there as well. So if either of those go together into your bloodstream, it will become septicemic, because that's how you get sepsis, is an infection in your blood.
And you are well and truly fucked.
Well and truly fucked. Now, there are actually further symptoms to the plague when it progresses to septicemic plague, which I haven't said yet. Now, along with the fever, chills, and extreme weakness, you also develop abdominal pain, vomiting, and diarrhea. You also bleed from your mouth, nose, and or rectum, or under your skin. And finally, you'll also experience blackening and death of tissue in your extremities, most commonly in your fingers, toes, and nose. Basically, your extremities die before you die.
Do they fall off? It sounds a lot like frostbite, but...
I don't think they stay there long enough to fall off. I don't think you survive long enough for them to fall off. They would have to be a while, or at least a couple of weeks. But you would die likely way sooner than that.
And oddly enough, those symptoms are very similar to me when I have a hangover.
Yeah, black fingers.
Bleeding from the rectum.
I think you need to figure out what you're doing. You're drinking like black fingers and rectum bleeding. There's something wrong.
And don't forget the AIDS, my friend. It's still
cause and effect here. This is all this is. We're figuring out your problems slowly, Greg. This is your episode. Your time to shine.
We call this a podcast. I'll call it therapy, mate.
Now, before we end the episode, I'd like to talk about a quick reference to one of the diseases that we did not mention yet, and we're not going to go really into big detail with, but this is the smallpox pandemic that really, it was just a long-lasting disease that lasted for forever. Now, between 20 and 60% of all those infected with smallpox and over 80% of infected were children died from the disease when it originally was around. So during the 20th century, it was actually estimated that smallpox was responsible for between 300 to 500 million deaths.
Jesus Christ, there's some high numbers.
Yeah. In the early 1950s, it was around 50 million cases of smallpox occurring in the world each year. Now, I mentioned that, and I'm not going to go into a lot of detail on it, because the smallpox pandemic lasted for 100 years, I believe it was.
Mm.
So it lasted for a long time. So those deaths were spread out over quite a long time. It's not like the Spanish flu, where it only lasted about a year and a half or so. But you also need to mention it, because this is one of the first ever diseases to have a vaccine made for it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I think I know about this. Yeah, I'll let you explain it, because I don't think I remember that much, but I do know about this.
Well, yeah, and I'm just, that's all it is. It was all I was saying is that there was a scientist who developed the vaccine, and he also inoculated his children from it. And he developed the first person to develop a vaccine for a disease. It was one of the first vaccines. But then the World Health Organization in around 1950 or 1940 went on a immunization kick, basically. And in the 1960s, I think it was, 1960s or 70s, mm-hmm. they finally found that the smallpox disease was completely eradicated after killing over 300 to 500 million people. So
Jesus Christ.
It's a very, very big feather in the cap of the World Health Organization to say that they helped eradicate a century-long pandemic. So this is the power of vaccinations. That is the power of vaccinations.
It's very important.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, smallpox could come back. It could make a resurgence. But if as long as we keep up with vaccinations, we're fine. So, mm-hmm. Very, very interesting stuff here. Now, please let me make this clear. We did not make this episode to scare you listeners. We put this episode together to give you a bit of a taster of what humans kind of have already lived through. We've already made it through so much. I mean, pandemics have happened, and pandemics will happen. As the world becomes more populated, we will continue seeing a higher chance of pandemics in the future. Now, Greg, we mentioned earlier about rising population and an overpopulation. A lot of people will notice this. I didn't put the facts in the episode, but quite a few of these diseases originated in China and Asian countries.
High population, very highest population in the world, China.
It's that, but there's also something else to it. I mean, yes, it is a knock-on effect from overpopulation. So obviously, when you have overpopulation, you have to build new cities, you have to build new homes. So there's quite a lot of tearing down of rainforests and forests and wildlife, basically. Well, in this wildlife are predators that carry these diseases, or animals in general that carry these diseases. And what you do when you destroy their habitats, you invite them into different areas inhabited by people. So then this gives them the opportunity to cross the species barrier.
Mm-hmm. Again, this isn't the animal's fault. It's the diseases within the animals.
Yeah, exactly.
If anything, it's our fucking fault. All right, people? It's our fucking fault.
Yeah, I'm not blaming anyone specifically, but obviously, because, I mean, you look at China, they've actually put in quite a few steps to try to regulate overpopulation, although they are still quite a populated country.
They had the one child rule for a long time. I believe that's been overturned now, but
yeah, I think it might have been overturned, but yeah, they did have that for a while. But still, you look at the things that overpopulation, and also it's not just overpopulation, it's also manufacturing plants, so non-conservative movements or conservation movements. So you're looking at destroying wildlife for the sake of greed, I think, at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah, and obviously, if you're going to do that, and you're going to have overpopulated cities, and you're going to have animals that are retreating to where they can to just literally survive, you're going to have more opportunity to create these types of viruses, these pandemics. Now, this will happen again. And it will continue happening again. It will always happen until we do more conservation work in countries like China. I'm not blaming Chinese people, obviously. It's not like they make the rules. I mean, the government might think, but the people individually, there's no way they could be blamed themselves specifically for the coronavirus. But obviously, I think more conservation needs to be happening in countries like that, especially when they're dealing with large amount of populations and a large amount of exotic animals. You have to be careful with that mixture, because it will eventually turn into a pandemic. And I don't say that off my own knowledge. I say that off of a paper I read for this episode from a virologist. Virologist?
Well, you've essentially got a ginormous petri dish. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where you got all this stuff just coming together. It's just a recipe for disaster at the end of the day, if you think about it. Again, exotic animals and mass amounts of people is going to cause problems.
100%. Yeah, it absolutely will. And it just takes one bite from a disease-carrying rodent as long as the disease is contagious, bam, you have a pandemic, especially in a densely populated area.
And it spreads like wildfire, because you literally can't get within 3 feet from one another. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. It's going to happen again, so we need to find a way to at least avoid it as best, But if not avoidance, we need to be prepared for the next one. So we should all look to the future, really, and try our best to make sure that we work with the earth. You know, I'm not trying to be a hippie. I'm just saying that we need to work with the earth to actually help all of us survive.
Because the earth is trying to wipe us out.
Yeah, at every turn. Every
opportunity.
It's like a horror film. Yeah, every it's opportunity. Like
it wants us gone. Yeah. We are head lice to the planet.
Have you seen the ocean? It's that shit's scary, man.
Yeah.
Now, we should, along with us working with the earth, we should make sure that our leaders are working with the earth as well. No matter what your political party is, I don't care. I really don't care. You can be whatever you want. We really don't care. I know we make jokes, political jokes and stuff, but, you know, we don't care what your political
leaders are. You have your own opinions. Do what you like.
Yeah, but we still need to make sure that party leaders understand that the destruction of forests and other wildlife habitats are a direct cause of pandemics now. That is the thing. They have been in the past and they will continue to be in the future. That is just what it is.
We don't recognize the correlation between the two. You know what I mean? But we don't seem to recognize that, like, this leads to another thing when it's a butterfly effect. You know what I mean? Like,
well, they've even traced the bubonic plague back to China. So, I mean, obviously, I don't know if it was back then as densely populated. I'm sure it was as densely populated as it is now, but it was just densely populated in smaller areas, and it would just continue to expand, wouldn't it? But still, I mean, from literally the dawn of pandemics, they have been coming from certain things like this, other than, obviously, you're looking at AIDS and stuff that transmit through bodily fluids. That's a bit different, obviously, but... We're further to the destruction of forests and wildlife habitats being a direct cause of pandemics. Pandemics will likely be even more regular in the future if we're not careful now. They will continue happening, but they will also continue happening more and more and more.
Mm-hmm.
We could get to the point where every year we have a new pandemic if we're not careful. And that's dangerous. We can't have coronavirus every year. We can't have coronavirus 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You know what I mean? We can't go through all of that. We have to be careful.
There's one disease that we all seem to forget about, which has been the most deadly in history, malaria. It's still around.
Yeah.
It's literally the most deadly, proven by numbers. It's got the highest body count of any virus, any disease ever.
Well, it doesn't affect England or America, so why can't
it? Oh, because it doesn't affect my plain white body. It doesn't matter. It's literally got the highest body count of anyone, and that is still around. We haven't cured that. Yeah. I don't believe we have anyway. I might be misinformed, but again, the most deadly virus of all time. Still going, and we just ignore it.
Yeah. Well, we talk about all these diseases. They'll continue to be around. Like I said, they will likely be even more regular in the future if we're not careful. And let's just agree that that would be truly unfortunate.
Truly unfortunate. Now, I do actually have one kind of fun fact about a disease we didn't cover today that I find kind of interesting, and it's about cholera during the 1800s in England specifically. It was I haven't done some mad research into this. It's just come to me recently while I was doing the podcast. I thought of it. It was a disease that was spread via water, and people couldn't figure it out. And again, you'd literally diarrhea yourself to death. Now, during that time, obviously people were drinking water from the wells and all that sort of stuff, and it was killing them. And funny enough, the only people who generally survived the cholera outbreak of the 1800s were the alcoholics, because cholera couldn't survive the brewery process of where it became, you know, mixed with alcohol and became ales and beers and whatever it was. So the people who just spent all their time in the pub drinking, they generally survived the cholera outbreak.
Well, let's all take a page from that book, shall we? Let's get back into the pubs. Open the pubs. Fuck the lockdown. Get back in the pubs. We need it now more than ever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's our little story about plagues, everybody. I hope you enjoyed it. This episode was not as research heavy as I would have liked it to be, just for the fact that next week is Halloween, and I've got a pretty terrible, graphic, and awful story lined up, and I've been trying to set up for that one.
And I'm excited for it. I don't know what it is, but he's told me it's graphic and gruesome and all the good stuff, so it's a 5-star episode, and I'm excited for it.
It will be a very, very brutal episode, so definitely listener discretion is advised. We will put up multiple warnings on this one, just so you guys are aware. And just so you don't listen to it, it's pretty much got every horrible thing you could think of in it. So we will. I'm looking forward to the episode because we haven't had a graphic episode in a long time. Because true crime and that sort of stuff is fun to go into. Obviously, the it's dark material, isn't it? So it just changes the podcasts. It just changes the feeling that the podcast has when we do those episodes. So it's fun to break it up every now and then. If you guys want to get in touch with the show, let us know if we got anything wrong during this episode. More than happy to talk about that. Get in touch at info@fortunatehistory.com. Please join all of our social media and our newsletter on our website. It would really help us out. I really would appreciate that.
Okay. Again, me, Instagram, it's still JScreen93. I didn't change it last week for once. I actually do have one shout out to give. It's for a musician friend of mine. He's got, he goes under the name Shantytown. He's got a new song out called Pablo. It's on Apple Music. It's absolutely quality. Woo! If you fancy giving it a listen, definitely do so.
Yeah, definitely do that. If you want to follow me, just Google Cody Pennington. If you want to follow the show, just Google Unfortunate History. But I guess with that said, unfortunately, we gotta go. So stay unfortunate.
Stay unfortunate, guys. Ta-ra.
Bye.